Audible Studios presents This Is Your Brain on Parasites, How Tiny Creatures Manipulate Our Behavior and Shape Society. Written by Kathleen McAuliffe. Performed by Nicole Zanzarella. Introduction. We like to think of ourselves as in the driver's seat, choosing where to go, whether to speed up or slow down, when to switch lanes. We make the decisions and bear the consequences. This is a convenient, even necessary belief. If we jettison the notion of free will, the laws that hold people accountable for their actions begin to crumble. The world becomes an unruly or even terrifying place. Alien beings that turn us into zombies, bloodthirsty vampires, and sex-crazed robots are standard sci-fi fare precisely because they evoke the horror of losing control. Or worse, becoming slaves to creatures bent on exploiting us for their own gain. So it's disconcerting to think that an invisible passenger might also have a hand on the steering wheel, vying to move us in one direction when we'd rather go another. When we let up on the accelerator, an unseen foot presses harder. Parasites are like that invisible passenger, adept at outwitting our immune systems. They sneak aboard our bodies, and then the devilry begins. They cause rashes, lesions, aches, and pain. They eat us from the inside out, use us to incubate their young, sap our energy, blind, poison, maim, and sometimes kill us. But that's not the full extent of their clout. Some parasites have another trick up their sleeves. An awesome hidden power that astounds and confounds even scientists who study them for a living. Simply stated, these parasites are masters of mind control. Whether as tiny as a virus or as big as a 6-foot-long tapeworm, they have found all kinds of devious methods to manipulate the behavior of their hosts, and that includes, many researchers now strongly suspect, humans. The impetus for this book was a discovery on the internet. I'm a science journalist, and one day while foraging for interesting topics to write about, I stumbled across information about a single-celled parasite that targets the brains of rats. By tinkering with the rodent's neural circuits, exactly how is still a matter of fervid study, the invader transforms the animal's deep, innate fear of cats into an attraction, thus luring it straight into the jaws of its chief predator. This is a felicitous outcome not only for the cat, but also, I was stunned to learn, for the parasite. It turns out the feline gut is exactly where the organism needs to be to complete the next stage of its reproductive cycle. This revelation got me thinking about my own cat, who was fond of dropping dead rodents at my feet. Horrified as I was by this habit, I could not help admiring her hunting prowess. Now I wondered if it was she who was so clever, or the parasite. As I continued reading, more surprising news greeted me. The microscopic organism is a common inhabitant of the human brain because cats can transmit it to us when we come in contact with their feces. Perhaps the parasite was meddling with our brains too, speculated a Stanford neuroscientist associated with the research. I contacted him to find out what he meant and was pointed in the direction of a biologist in Czechoslovakia. "He's a bit of a wild man," he warned me, "but I think it would be worth your while to speak to him." I called Prague and over the span of an hour was told a tale as bizarre as any I've heard in my profession. It occurred to me on several occasions that the person at the other end of the line might be a kook. But I pushed those thoughts aside and kept listening because it was impossible not to. I'm a sucker for a great story, and this one had all the elements of a first-rate medical thriller. It was by turns creepy, scary, weird, and inspiring. What's more, if true, it had important health ramifications. After the conversation ended, I called around to other experts on this cat parasite for a reality check. I did this rather sheepishly at first, out of fear of sounding gullible. But one source after another said that the check's ideas, though far from proven, deserved serious scrutiny. His human studies, and the odyssey that led him down that path of inquiry, became the basis of a legendary article I wrote for The Atlantic and are described in a chapter here, along with his most up-to-date results, so you can draw your own conclusions. A word of caution. Before you get to that section, please do not panic and give away a pet cat. As I will explain in more detail, there are much more effective ways to protect against the infection than parting with a cherished companion. Over the course of investigating the topic, I came across many other stories of parasitic mind control. I learned of parasites that force their hosts to be their personal bodyguards, babysitters, chauffeurs, servants, and more. Sometimes scientists understand how they accomplish these feats. Other times they're left scratching their heads. It seemed to me that neurosurgeons and psychopharmacologists could learn a lot from parasites. Once I became aware of their antics, it was hard to look at the world outside my window in the same way again. Behind the scenes of the spectacle we call natural selection, I was surprised to learn parasites are often directing the action, influencing the outcome of the battle between predator and prey. Insights into their stagecraft gave me a radically different perspective on ecology, evolutionary biology, and the spread of mosquito-borne scourges like malaria and dengue hemorrhagic fever. While parasites' coercive tactics have many disturbing implications for humans, the news from this front is not all bleak. Some microbes may actually improve our mental health, and invaders with sinister aims will have to contend with much more than our immune systems. Mounting research suggests that hosts have developed powerful psychological defenses against parasites. Scientists call this mental shield the behavioral immune system. Experiments show that it kicks into action in situations where the threat of infection is high, prompting the organism in peril to respond in prescribed ways to reduce its risk. A simple example is a dog that reacts to being hurt by licking its wound, thus coating the injury with saliva rich in bacteria-killing compounds. In smart primates like humans, however, it appears that our behavioral defenses have become tied to increasingly abstract and symbolic ways of thinking. Many habits and traits that seem far removed from pathogens, such as our political beliefs, sexual attitudes, or intolerance toward people who break societal taboos, may arise at least in part from a subconscious desire to avoid contagion. There is even evidence that the presence or absence of germs in our immediate surroundings, indicated by such signs as a rancid odor or filthy living conditions, can influence our personalities. Directly or indirectly, parasites manipulate how we think, feel, and act. In fact, our interaction with them may shape not only the contours of our minds, but also the characteristics of entire societies, perhaps explaining some puzzling cultural differences between parts of the world where pathogens are an omnipresent threat, and areas that have dramatically lowered that risk through vaccination programs and improved sanitation. Numerous lines of evidence suggest that the prevalence of parasites in our broader communities influences the food we eat, our religious practices, whom we choose as mates, and the governments that rule us. The science behind these claims is still young. Some findings are preliminary and may not hold up to scrutiny. But the research is massing quickly, and the outlines of a new discipline are clearly taking shape. This newly emerging field has been christened neuroparasitology. But don't be deceived by the label. While neuroscientists and parasitologists currently dominate this endeavor, it is increasingly drawing in investigators from fields as diverse as psychology, immunology, anthropology, religious studies, and political science. If pathogens' impact on our lives is really so far-reaching, why has it taken us so long to discover this? One likely reason is that until recently, scientists underestimated the sophistication of parasites. Over most of the past century, the complicated life cycles of these organisms, coupled with their puny size and concealment inside the body, made them exceedingly difficult to study. Largely out of researchers' ignorance, parasites were presumed to be backward, degenerative life forms. Their inability to survive as independent, free-living creatures was seized as proof of their primitive status. The very notion that hosts high up the evolutionary ladder might be jerked around like marionettes by such simpletons, many lacking even a nervous system, seemed absurd. Until the tail end of the 20th century, our behavioral defenses against parasites were also assumed to be rudimentary. Indeed, the subtlest of these adaptations, manifested as automatic thoughts and feelings, were overlooked almost entirely, probably because they occur at the periphery of our awareness. Scientists are no more cognizant of subconscious impulses than the rest of us, so this subterranean realm appears to have gone uncharted simply because no one thought to look for it. Even today, the intimacy and intricacy of parasite-host relationships take many neuroscientists and psychologists by surprise. Laymen are often dumbfounded by how nature could have given rise to parasitic manipulations in the first place. Some stratagems seem so clever and cunning that only a human or an omniscient god could have dreamed them up. The emergence of the behavioral immune system in parallel with such manipulations only adds to the challenge of comprehending the origins of these interactions. So before moving ahead, let's stop to ponder how evolution took this turn. Parasites and hosts have been competing with each other for billions of years. The first bacteria were parasitized by the first viruses. When larger, multicellular life forms emerged, these microbes in turn colonized them. Meanwhile, parasites continued evolving into a menagerie of distinct forms: roundworms, slugs, mites, leeches, lice, and the like. As life grew in size and complexity, natural selection favored parasites that were the best at evading hosts' defenses, and hosts with the greatest skill in repelling the invaders. Today, virtually every aspect of the human body's design bears witness to this age-old struggle. Our most visible defense is our skin, which provides a thick barrier to the hordes of microbes that populate its surface. Entry points are especially fiercely guarded. Eyes are bathed in tears that flush out intruders. Ears are lined with hairs to keep out bugs. The nose has a filtration system for screening pathogens out of the air. Invaders that make further inroads will only encounter stiffer resistance. The respiratory tract, for example, produces mucus that traps encroachers. As for any microbes that we swallow in our food, they'll likely meet a fiery death in the cauldron of the stomach, whose industrial-strength acid could literally burn a hole in your shoe. Should all these defenses be breached, immune cells will rush into the battle. This army is led by sentries that flag the intruder, and they're followed by white cells that devour it, and still other cells that record the enemy's marking so that new regiments can swiftly be called up should the body encounter the same foe again. With firepower like that, you'd think humans would always be on the winning side. But parasites have huge advantages over us. Their population size dwarfs our own by staggering numbers, and their rapid replication rates ensure that there will always be a lucky few with mutations that will give them the upper hand. The battle between hosts and parasites is an unending arms race. In this intensely competitive environment, any parasites that by chance hit on ways to modify the behavior of a host so as to enhance their own transmission, perhaps, for example, by nudging it a wee bit closer to the parasite's next host, would very swiftly multiply. Since hosts can evolve as quickly to thwart every new trick parasites deploy against them, their best chance for survival is to acquire traits that offer them broader protection. Mutations that prompt an animal to feel repelled by common sources of contagion, for instance, murky green water, a dung heap, or other members of its flock acting strangely, might serve that function. The beauty of such psychological adaptations is that they shield against not one, but hundreds or even thousands of infectious agents. That's a lot of bang for the buck, an opportunity that evolution is unlikely to have passed up. In humans, moreover, instinctual responses that protect against infection would also be amplified and embellished through learning and cultural transmission, further leveraging their benefit. It's a good bet that's exactly what happened. Though lions, bears, Sharks and weapon-wielding humans may populate our nightmares. Parasites have always been our worst enemy. In medieval times, one-third of Europe's population was decimated by the bubonic plague. Within a few centuries of Columbus's arrival in the New World, 95% of the indigenous population of the Americas had been wiped out by smallpox, measles, influenza, and other germs brought in by European invaders and colonists. More people died in the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic than were killed in the trenches of World War I. Malaria, presently among the most deadly infectious agents on the planet, is arguably the greatest mass murderer of all time. Experts estimate the disease has killed half of all people who have roamed the planet since the Stone Age. New insights into how parasites spread among us and the hidden power of our minds in countering this tsunami-sized threat could yield huge benefits. One is that it might suggest innovative ways to block the dissemination of much-dreaded infectious agents. Another hope is that discoveries in neuroparasitology will expand our knowledge of the root causes of mental disturbances that we don't normally associate with parasites, possibly leading to advances in their prevention and treatment. The discipline's greatest promise for the near future, however, is its capacity to enrich our understanding of ourselves and our place in nature. Certainly, findings from this frontier raise provocative questions. If pathogens can fiddle with our minds, what does that say about our responsibility for our own actions? Are we really the free thinkers we imagine ourselves to be? To what extent do parasites define our identity? How do they affect moral values and cultural norms? In the final chapter of this book, I will attempt to salvage the concept of free will. But be warned, it will take quite a beating in the meantime.